What happens when we begin to realize that the 200-year experiment we've called the American healthcare system has failed? Tune in to Awakened Wellness with Mylynn Riobé, MD, and join the conversation about how to heal our broken system, to reverse our current health crisis. The entire world is looking for answers, and the truth is hidden in plain sight. Learn how spirituality, ancient traditions, and cutting-edge science are merging to create a new paradigm of wellness every Wednesday at 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time, with live video shows every first and third Wednesday at 12 p.m. Eastern Time, when you can call in and ask the questions that matter most to you.
Welcome to Awakened Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Mylynn Riobé, and you're listening to us live here on Dream Vision 7 Radio. And today's topic is going to be the risks of weight loss injection drugs and whether or not you should use them. And so, you know, of course, weight loss is always a hot button topic. It's always, first and foremost, on many people's minds. And this boom, this explosion really of weight loss drugs over the last several years has been concerning, frankly. and again, on the surface, it sounds great, right? Works really well to lose weight. We understand in the medical community that if we can assist people, support people in losing 5 to 15% of their excess weight, that we reduce their risk of diseases. And so, again, on the surface, it sounds great. So these drugs have been shown to do exactly that, right? So the ones that we're talking about specifically are what are called GLP-1 agonists, most notably known as Ozempic as a brand name, or semaglutide. There's a couple of them on the market. Liraglutide is another one. They're all basically the same type of drug. They are injectables used to treat diabetes, and one of the side effects was determined to have been weight loss. And so it automatically became also a weight loss drug in addition to being a diabetes treatment drug. And so, again, on the surface, it sounds great, right? Oh, all I have to do is inject this thing and, watch the pounds melt off of me, and I'll go skipping off into the sunset and reduce my risk of disease, right? And like all things that are too good to be true, this as well is too good to be true. When we look at it through a Chinese medicine lens, we could kind of see that it was going to be too good to be true before it ever got off the ground. And even in a couple of patients that I treated at the beginning of this this fad, I made that very, very clear that this was not a solution for weight loss. Now, it may stem the tide temporarily while we're working on the underlying root causes of the obesity and the weight gain. However, it by itself was not going to do that. I'm always the bearer of bad news for my clients who come in and they ask me about these things, because when they're out at their other doctor's offices, the doctor's practically holding a syringe in his or her hand as you walk in the door and jab you with it to start the program. And I'm the one that's always, waving the cautionary flag, right? So I'm always the odd one out, so to speak. And so I had to really get used to that, being the only one sounding the alarm when everybody else was gung-ho about something. And so I've become comfortable in that role now. And so what do we know about these drugs, and why are they dangerous if they're touted to be so wonderful? It's the mechanism of action. It's the way in which they induce the weight loss that's dangerous. And again, it doesn't look dangerous on the surface, right? So people are like, what do you mean? It works. Like, what's the problem? So we have to ask ourselves, what is it working to do, right? When we look at the end game, which is to lose the weight, it works, but it only works temporarily. Just like most other drugs, they only work temporarily. Alzheimer's drugs only work temporarily. A lot of the drugs that we study short term and say are effective, had we studied them longer, we would have realized they're not as effective as we think. And unfortunately, the Food and Drug Administration does not require long-term studies. Now, they do require that you continue to monitor the drug after it's released, right? So once something becomes FDA approved for a particular indication, in this case being weight loss, it's studied for a very short period of time. And then it's, approved, and then off it goes, right? It gets unleashed on the public, and then the rest of the study is done on you as the consumer of the drug. And so we've seen a lot of drugs be withdrawn from the market even after FDA approval due to simply the long-term extreme dangers of these drugs. Short-term, they were great, like no problem, right? They were studied for 3-6 months, and then they were unleashed on the public. And suddenly people started dying after taking these drugs, and then they were withdrawn, right? There are some pretty famous incidences of this where the COX-2 inhibitors, Celebrex, Vioxx, again, unleashed on the public, studied for a short period of time, and then withdrawn due to their severe danger. Now, the GLP-1 agonists don't appear to be that dangerous, thankfully, but you are the experiment. You are the running experiment on these drugs, should you choose to use them. Because what's happening now is, yes, they induce the weight loss, but as soon as you go off of them, you gain your weight back and then some, right? And then you go back on them and then you lose the weight again. And then you stop the drug and then you gain your weight back and then some more. And so it's this 2 step forwards, 1.5, sometimes 2.5 steps backwards. And then you go on this yo-yo. So now we're being told, well, you know what? We might have to use these things forever. Now they weren't studied to be used forever. They were studied to be used for a short period of time. So what's not happening is the FDA didn't withdraw its approval and say, wait, we have to take these things off the market and now study them longer to make sure we can use it forever. It's just being used forever. And again, you are the running experiment on that. If you choose to take these drugs lifelong, which is what the newer recommendations are. So therein lies the problem, right? One, it doesn't actually really work unless you take it forever. And of course, that's a pharmaceutical company's dream come true, right? A drug that has to be used forever, right? And so they would really want to market and peddle that, right? Because that makes them a lot of money, of course. But is it good for us? Is that something we should be using forever, right? Lifelong, as they're now, marketing it. And I would argue that the answer is no, right? And again, I would also equally argue that the answer is, as usual, it depends, right? Everything is a double-edged sword. Everything. Oxygen is a double-edged sword, right? If you don't have enough oxygen, you got problems. If you get too much oxygen, you got problems, right? So there's always this sweet spot for everything. And the use of these drugs is very similar. So just like the idea of statins, right? When statins came out, they had a very narrow indication for use. And then it just got broadened and broadened and broadened and broadened to the point where pretty much everybody's getting prescribed a statin as soon as their cholesterol goes above 200, right? It wasn't originally indicated for that, but it became that over time. And again, people are the ongoing experiments on statins, right? In the live use of them. The same thing is happening here with the GLP-1 agonists. They were studied short-term, and now they're being used long-term. And insurance companies are being pressured, of course, to cover these drugs so that they can be used long-term. And again, that may be beneficial, right, to certain people. So people with severe obesity, who have diabetes, who have, for example, metabolic syndrome, right, which is a cluster of diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol. Severe risk, significant risk of death from a cardiovascular event, a heart attack, a stroke. So for those people, a GLP-1 agonist, you know, lifelong may save their lives, may add many years of extra life to their lifespan. And so, you know, I'm not here to say that it's not good for anyone. But for that person who just kind of wants to look good, for that person who's, you know, it's more of an aesthetics thing than an actual, you know, risk thing. So for example, someone who's say 30 pounds overweight and they just want to look better. This is not the drug to take lifelong to achieve that, because what you're going to see are long-term side effects. And again, because these drugs were not studied long-term, we don't know what the long-term side effects are, but can we make educated guesses about what they will be? Absolutely. And how can we do that? We can look at their side effects to start. And then we can look at the mechanisms of action. How do they actually work and what do they do? Once we understand how they work and what they do and what the side effects are, we can see what systems that they impact in the body that they might break down the road. So the gastrointestinal system is the system that is most clearly acted upon by these drugs. And the central nervous system as well. And so we can see long-term that there could be some significant gastrointestinal problems induced by these drugs, because they are forcing the gastrointestinal system to behave in a specific way that it would not otherwise behave in. Why is it doing that? It's doing that in order to short circuit the gastrointestinal system, to trick it into thinking that it's full. So that your appetite goes down, so that you feel full, even though you've not eaten, so that it induces a more or less a starvation mode in the body, so that then you can lose weight. And again, while on the surface that might sound good, long-term that's dangerous, right? And we'll go into why that is more specifically. The other way it impacts the body is through the central nervous system. So it impacts the center of the brain. Again, that area that would control hunger and fullness, you know, the sensation of being full through the manipulation of a hormone called leptin. So it tricks the body into thinking it's full so that you feel less hungry, so that you don't eat as much. So it allows you to reduce your cravings. It slows down the gut. So the gut doesn't empty as much as it should. And now those of you that listen to my podcast a lot, hopefully that sounds familiar, right? That is one of the known causes of a small intestine bacterial overgrowth, is slow stomach emptying or slow gastrointestinal motility. So this particular drug does that on purpose. It slows your gut down on purpose. So what is it doing? It's inducing a risk of a small intestine bacterial overgrowth over time. Now, I've done a lot of podcasts on SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth, and how it's related to all kinds of diseases, including diabetes, including cardiovascular diseases, heart attacks, strokes, and kidney diseases. And so a drug that you would use lifelong that would be on purpose, slowing your gut down, which would then cause an increased risk of a gut infection, which would then cause malabsorption, which would then cause a bunch of vitamin and mineral deficiencies, which would then cause other diseases. We can see how dangerous these particular drugs are if they're used long-term. Inducing the body to think it's full is dangerous, because then you don't eat and you don't get the quality food that you actually need. So these GLP-1 agonists are not treating the root cause of the problem, right? They are short-circuiting the body to induce a desired result, right? Which is the weight loss. When you short circuit the body, you cause side effects. When you short circuit the body, you may cause diseases down the road. When you short circuit the body, you may actually get the disease you're trying to prevent with the drug that you're using. We see that with antidepressants, right? One of the known side effects of antidepressants is suicidality, i.e., the increased risk of suicide. So there's a way that using something long term induces the very thing you're trying to prevent using the drug. And I see this as being the same thing in terms of inducing heart disease, in terms of inducing a small bowel infection. You know, we can, the writing's on the wall. We don't have to have studies come out in 20 and 30 years to tell us, oops, we shouldn't have done that, right? We can see it moving forward because we know how the drugs work, because we created the drugs, right? And so we can see it. The writing's on the wall as to what these drugs will do long term. Now, again, that doesn't mean they're all bad, right? So for people who have a really high risk of having a heart attack and a stroke, kidney failure, for example, due to severe diabetes and things like that, these drugs may be lifesavers for them. And so again, I'm not suggesting that we should just write them off, you know, across the board for everyone. There are very distinct populations where these drugs will be life-saving. But for those of us who are just using it for aesthetics, for those of us who are just using it because we'd rather appear to be fit, than to have those extra 20 and 30 pounds on our frame, this could be very dangerous long term. And so, see if we have any questions. Looks like we might. Statement, thank you for bringing the subject up. My friend is paying a lot of money at a private clinic for weight loss, yet she's not losing weight and looks worse than before she started the treatment. Yes, and again, you know, I'm sorry to hear that. That's unfortunate. And yes, they're extremely expensive, these drugs. And in fact, when I did use them for a couple of my clients, I had them compounded. They were much cheaper when they're made for you than if you get them from the pharmaceutical manufacturers. So we were talking about hundreds of dollars rather than thousands of dollars when it's made for you. And so, what's the problem with that, right? So, A, it's expensive. That's true. For me, I consider nothing to be too expensive if it's going to help you get better, right? For me, 5 cents is too expensive if it's going to make you sicker, right? But $1,000 may be cheap if it's going to make you well, right? $10,000 may be cheap if it's going to promote wellness. And so, again, it's relative. She's not losing weight. That's interesting. So that may be potentially because they're not looking at modification, right? Lifestyle modifications, nutrition, and things like that. So I'm not sure what she's using, your friend, if she's using these particular GLP-1 agonists or something else. But if you don't couple that with healthy eating, proper exercise, et cetera, it won't work. So I'm sorry to hear that. And I hope she can get some better help than that. Question, I can get the shots online. Is that product different than the one from my primary doctor's prescription? No, you can get them online. Again, this craze is kind of frightening in a way, because yes, they're very easy to obtain. And again, ethics is really important, right? As physicians, our number one code of ethics is to do no harm. And again, it looks like these things are not doing any harm on the surface. But if we continue to use them, yes, they may become harmful. And so, as physicians, you know, I was reading a study before I hopped on the podcast today. As physicians, it's interesting because there was a study done called the ACTION Study. And they looked at physicians' behaviors and how they feel about certain things. And so they compared how physicians felt about weight loss drugs versus diet and lifestyle modification. And the physicians in general tended to favor diet and lifestyle modification over weight loss drugs, because they just felt that they were safer and quote unquote better long term. The conclusion of that study was that the physicians didn't have enough knowledge about how beneficial the weight loss drugs were, and that's why they thought diet and lifestyle modifications were better, right? So as a doctor, as I'm reading this study and I get told, if you don't think these weight loss drugs are the best thing since sliced bread, something's wrong with you. Like, that was the conclusion of the study. And I'm like, that's an interesting way to manipulate people. That's an interesting way to manipulate doctors into thinking that, oh, if I don't jump on this weight loss drug bandwagon, I'm not practicing according to the standard of care. Right. And that couldn't be any further from the truth. Right. Now, again, if you have a super sick patient, right, their blood sugar is too high and they're significantly overweight, you know, they have a tremendous risk of having heart attacks, or maybe they've even already had a heart attack, right? Don't write off these drugs. They may be very useful. But again, if it's just an aesthetics thing, if it's just, I have my, I don't know, 30 year class reunion, high school reunion or something, and I just want to look good, right? This drug may not be the best thing for you, right? So as a physician, I have to be very grounded in my understanding of what is this thing? How does it work? How long was it studied for? How long are they asking me to use it for? So it was studied for a few months, but they're asking me to use it forever. That doesn't make any sense, right? There should be a longer study period for these drugs before they're unleashed on the public. But again, that's how it works. That's how the consumerism in this country works. And so, as a healthcare consumer, you really have to know that. You really have to understand that. And as a physician, we have to know and understand that, right? That sometimes we're being manipulated to use something that may or may not be the best thing for our patients, right? And so if we want to look like we're practicing according to the standard, there may be some pressure put on us to do that. And it may or may not be in our patient's best interest, right? And so we're going to go to our first commercial break. We've got a few more questions here, which are fantastic. So you're listening to Awaken Wellness Now. We're talking about the dangers of weight loss injection drugs. And we'll answer these questions and talk about some more dangers and how you can avoid them when we come back from this commercial break.
What happens when we begin to realize that the 200-year experiment we've called the American healthcare system has failed? Learn how spirituality, ancient traditions, and cutting-edge science are merging to create a new paradigm of wellness on Awakened Wellness with Mylène Riobé. That's Mylaine Riobe, MD. Tune in every Wednesday at 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time with live video shows every first and third Wednesdays at 12 p.m. Eastern, when you can call in and ask Dr. Mylène the questions that matter most to you. Dr. Mylène is the founder of Awakened Wellness Now, an online education community dedicated to helping exhausted entrepreneurs recover from burnout and live their best lives. She's also a practicing physician at the New York Center for Integrative Health in New York City. For more information, visit awakenedwellnessnow.com. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you in for this dynamic, forward-thinking show.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every Thursday and Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom weaved through his delightful stories. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Ever wonder what it's like to have your own radio show? Well, wonder no longer, because you can dip into the radio airwaves by being host for the day on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. It's a fabulous way to get your radio feet wet. It's an opportunity to market your business, modality, or book. have a guest, mention a sponsor, and take callers. Or you may want to facilitate a lesson by going solo. It's up to you. Listeners can be online, mobile, in cars with Bluetooth, or listen through Amazon's Echo by asking, Alexa, play Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. For more details, go to dreamvision7radio.com and click on Host for the Day.
Delight your kids with an enchanting journey by reading the Paper Doll Kids children's book by Deborah Beauvais and Janine Sullivan. There's even a catchy tune, Kids for Love Song, produced by Bob Sherwood and sung by kids just like yours. The story weaves around seven paper dolls flying around the world doing good deeds as they bring important attention to our endangered animal friends. There's even a magical ring with a universal message. Kids become interested in service projects, action through compassion, and planting seeds that nurture positive change. The Paper Doll Kids and Kids for Love Song are a production of the Kids for Love Project. Get the book now on Amazon Kindle and the song on CD Baby or iTunes.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back to Awaken Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Milan Ryobe, and you're listening to Dream Vision 7 Radio. And today we are talking about GLP-1 agonist injections, weight loss injection drugs, and their risks. Question, would weight loss surgery be a better choice than a lifetime of shots? No. That was another kind of bust. Again, anything that short circuits the body is going to backfire at some point, right? Weight loss surgery was basically, let's make the stomach smaller so that people get full faster and, you know, we'll be good, right? The problem with that is it impacted people's ability to absorb. And so they eventually got a whole bunch of vitamin and mineral deficiencies, and it backfired. They gained their weight back, right? Which is the same thing we will see with these injection drugs, right? Because they will induce vitamin and mineral deficiencies if they trigger a bowel infection, right? SIBO. Again, one of the significant risks of SIBO is slow transit time in the gut. So your gut doesn't move fast enough. The muscles don't contract enough. And so the food doesn't pass through the gut quickly enough. It's too slow. So the theory there is, well, if the gut isn't emptying like it's supposed to, bugs can just settle in and nothing's shoving them down, you know, and out of the system, and they will create an infection, right? These weight loss injections do the same thing. And so in my opinion, I think if we were to use this as a quote unquote lifelong or long-term injectable drug, or even the oral one, I see a question coming up on that. It's the same problem. You're going to induce malabsorption by slowing the gut down and potentially increasing a risk of infection, which causes malabsorption. When you're not absorbing properly, you're not going to absorb your food, which means you're not going to get the vitamins and the minerals and the antioxidants and the amino acids and the fatty acids that you need for your body to actually perform functions. That's what the weight loss surgeries did. They induced vitamin and mineral deficiencies because they induced malabsorption. These injections will likely do the same thing. So we can put them all in the same bucket. Unfortunately, they will. That's not any better. And question, I heard they're creating a pill to replace the shots. Would that be safer? No. It might even be worse, right? Because you're actually taking them right into the gut where they tend to have their most significant side effects. So at least the shot, you're not hitting the gut with the drug, you know, right off the bat, right? If you're taking it orally, you're hitting the gut right off the bat. And the gut is the main place where these drugs act. And so I wouldn't be surprised if there were even more gastrointestinal side effects with the oral pills than there are with the injections. So some of the side effects are nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea, right? Again, because it's inducing the gut to slow down. So if the gut's not moving, things will back up. And if the gut's not moving properly, it may not absorb water properly. And so you may have diarrhea. So if you're taking a pill directly into your gut, you will very likely be making that even worse. So I wouldn't be surprised if the side effects were worse. That wouldn't be safer. Question, isn't there an herb or natural way to lose weight? Yes, there are. So that brings me to the point of, again, when you short circuit the body in any way, you will inevitably cause the same problem you're trying to fix. You're just delaying it. So the delay may be useful. If you're at super high risk for another heart attack, delaying one is probably the best thing you can do, right? But if you're not at significant risk for a heart attack and you're just doing it to lose a couple of, you know, extra pounds, you may be placing yourself at risk for a heart attack. And so again, know thyself, right? You have to kind of know, and we rely on our physicians to help us with these decisions, but unfortunately our physicians are sometimes quite manipulated to think a certain way. And so they may not necessarily be our best resource, right? So we have to start to kind of have a sense of, well, how do I figure this out for myself if I sense that I'm not getting the right advice from the doctor's office, right? Or online or wherever I'm looking for the advice, right? So what is the actual root cause of the problem, right? The actual root cause of people gaining weight is a slow metabolism or significant inflammation and toxic overload, right? So in traditional Chinese medicine, we know there to be multiple causes of obesity or weight gain. So we need to figure out, well, what is my specific cause? Why am I gaining weight? And that will vary from person to person. So there are many different causes of obesity. So you have to figure out, well, which ones do I have? Which ones are mine? And then fix them from the root. So if you're gaining weight because you have too much inflammation, then you will want to find the source of the inflammation. What is the source of this inflammation? Could be the gut, could be the liver. That's impacting the immune system that is then creating this inflammatory response that is then resulting in weight gain. So not all weight gain is fat storage, right? Some of it is inflammatory. And so when you go on a diet, for example, and you lose weight really quickly that first week to 10 days, right? You're not really losing fat, you're losing inflammation. And then when you start to plateau and you struggle, that's where the body is being challenged to lose the fat, to burn the fat, right? But if your body's metabolism is too low, it won't do that. It won't want to burn the fat because burning fat actually costs your body a lot of energy. And if it doesn't have enough energy, it won't want to burn the fat. And instead, it'll just shut down body functions it doesn't need to do. Which will cause you to gain even more weight because as it's shutting down more body functions, it's reducing its calorie expenditure. And so your metabolism is dropping even more under those circumstances. So you have to figure out the whys. You got to know the different whys and correct them. Why is my metabolism too weak? You know, so sometimes it's a nutritional issue. So again, if you have, say, SIBO, for example, which is extremely common, some studies are saying up to 70 to 90% of certain populations have SIBO. SIBO induces malabsorption. It induces vitamin and mineral deficiencies. So some people, when they're under that type of stress, they will lose weight, and not in a good way. They will lose muscle mass. Because your body would prefer to burn muscle for energy than to burn fat. That's just how everybody's body functions. So your body is actually efficient. to avoid using the word lazy, we'll say it's efficient. So it would rather burn the least number of calories to maintain its efficiency, to get its work done. So if it perceives you're not getting enough food, if it's in a malabsorption state, if it thinks it's in a starvation state, it would rather break your muscle down to use that as fuel than to break down your fat. Why? Because it's less expensive for it to break your muscles down than it is for it to break fat down. So in other words, it only costs your body 4 calories to take a gram of muscle, a gram of protein to use for energy. It would cost your body 9 calories to get the same amount in fat. And so it's more expensive. It's $9 to get to the fat as opposed to $4 to get to the protein. So of course your body will want to spend $4 instead of $9. So the body, when it's forced to do something, it will try to do it in the most efficient way that it possibly can. So what happens is you start losing muscle mass instead of fat. And so you lose the weight, but it's in muscle mass. You're not actually losing fat. So that going back to the first question where you had your friend there who is at a weight loss clinic and she looks worse, right? That's because she's losing more muscle than fat. And you know, the muscle that we have helps us to look good, right? It's what maintains our tone. And so if we're losing muscle and now we have saggy skin and it's inflamed and just the fat is left, right? And we're losing a significant amount of muscle tone, we'll get crepey skin, you know, it'll sag, we won't look good, right? So these weight loss drugs do the same thing. So we're already seeing that a lot of the weight loss that people are experiencing is actually a loss of muscle mass and not so much a loss of fat. And so this is why people gain their weight back when they stop using these drugs. When you lose weight by destroying your muscle mass, you are destroying your metabolism. When you lose weight by reducing fat, you're not destroying your metabolism. So the goal is to lose the fat while maintaining the muscle mass. And that's the most important part of weight loss that we still haven't figured out in the medical community. We have to protect people's muscle mass while they're losing weight. Otherwise, it will constantly backfire on them, because what we're doing is we are destroying people's metabolisms, forcing the body to let go of the weight by losing muscle mass. And so these drugs do that. These drugs do exactly that. And so at first they were touted as saving muscle mass. Oh, no. It suppresses, you know, the hormones that would break your muscle mass down. So don't worry, use these drugs. They're fine. And now we're like, uh-oh. Well, maybe people are losing muscle mass using these injectable drugs, right? And that's the only reason you would gain your weight back, is if you lost more muscle mass than fat. If you truly lost fat in a weight loss program, you would not gain your weight back, because you would then have lost the muscle while conserving your metabolism or protecting it, and even potentially building it back up. And so the secret to successful weight loss is to induce the body to burn fat while protecting its muscle mass. And so it's interesting, these particular weight loss drugs work by mimicking a hormone called glucagon. Glucagon is a hormone that releases sugar into the bloodstream. The liver makes it, releases it, and then sugar goes into the bloodstream. So that helps the body to think it's full. So by increasing, you know, blood sugar, then that helps to reduce insulin, right? So insulin will drive sugar into the cell. Insulin also drives fat storage. And so if you're reducing insulin and increasing glucagon, you're going to think you're full, while not, you know, necessarily packing away more fat. The problem you're going to have is you're going to lose muscle mass instead, and you're going to gain the weight back, which is exactly what we're seeing already. And so we have to protect the body's ability to maintain its muscle mass if we want to have successful weight loss. And so we can see that these GLP agonists are not going to really be very helpful in doing that long term, unless you're at significant risk for heart disease or diabetes. And so I think we had more questions. Yes. So as far as, is there an herb or a natural way to lose weight? Yes, there is. But again, it has to be coupled with the nutrition and lifestyle modification. So if you have a bunch of vitamin and mineral deficiencies, and that's the reason your metabolism is weakened in the first place, if you go on a fad diet, whether it's, you know, these weight loss injection drugs or, you know, again, the weight loss surgeries, things like that, if you force the issue, you're going to actually destroy your metabolism. And so you want to make sure that if there are vitamin and mineral deficiencies, they're being corrected. If there's malabsorption, that is being corrected. If you have SIBO, has to be corrected because SIBO induces malabsorption. And so we have to make sure that these things are corrected while you're taking the weight loss herb, you know, while you're doing all those other things. And then we have to conserve muscle mass, right? And the only way to conserve muscle mass is to increase protein intake and do some type of strength training, Pilates, weightlifting, things like that. So that's why, again, I'm a huge protein fan and I'm a big strength training fan, right? Not that cardio is not important. It is. But doing excessive cardio, when you have a weakened metabolism, you're actually going to make yourself worse because, again, you're going to lose muscle mass doing that, which will destroy your metabolism. And so, again, if you have a deficient dynamic metabolic type, whether it's hot, cold, or temperature neutral, doing excessive cardio is actually going to backfire on you. And actually doing more strength training while making absolutely certain that you're taking in enough protein, adequate vegetable intake, so that you're getting all those vitamins and minerals that you need, that's going to be essential to, again, maintaining muscle mass. And there's a way, you know, so when I was doing my figure competition, competitions after I had my two kids, I wanted to do a figure competition just to, you know, lose baby fat and get back to the way I used to look, right? And so I worked with a trainer, and it was all about proper eating and maintaining muscle mass. And so I actually was able to lose fat while gaining muscle mass. And that's an extremely effective weight loss strategy, right? And bodybuilders know how to do this down to a science. Now, again, I don't use steroids. I don't use, you know, any enhancing drugs and things like that. This was strictly like food and, you know, and a couple of supplements, vitamins, you know, fish oils, things like that. But there is a way to do it. It's not impossible, right? And it's, we literally ignore it in the medical community. Like, we just don't pay attention, you know, and yet bodybuilders all over the world know the secret. So we need to kind of take that into the medical community and start looking at that. So what did I do? I had to eat, you know, every roughly 3 hours, had to have some type of protein in my diet with a ton of vegetables. And some carbs, right? You have to have carbs to maintain your muscle mass. So having too little, you know, calories in terms of carbohydrates is not safe either. But there's a way that you can strategize them. And in next week's podcast, we're going to talk about that, right? How to strategically lose weight while preserving your muscle. Like, what's effective? How do we effectively do this without these shortcuts that are going to backfire and actually make us sicker? Let's see, a previous podcast, you talked about older ladies and hormone treatments. I asked my doctor, she gave me a prescription, for estradiol and progesterone cream. Thank God for your advice. Hot flashes are gone. I feel great. Oh, awesome. Good. I'm glad. That's awesome. Yeah. Those are important too, right? Because hormones do regulate metabolism. They're the body's blueprints. You know, and so if you are really lacking in hormones, then it's going to be hard to lose weight. But again, don't use hormones in a vacuum. You know, you have to really couple hormonal balance with gastrointestinal health. So for me, anything that destroys gastrointestinal health, either because we're cutting it, you know, reducing the size of the stomach, or we're using a drug that causes it to be in distress, such as these GLP-1 agonists, soon as we start manipulating the gut in a way that it's not supposed to be manipulated, we're going to have problems. There's no question about that. So you have to marry the gastrointestinal system, balance that with hormonal balance to really have effective results. And you have to be doing the right exercises, right? So in our Wellness Warrior 9-Week Transformation Program, we talk about all of this. Like, how do you know what foods are going to get you to that goal? How do you know what exercises are going to be best for you? So there's a way that you can overexercise. There's a way that you can do the wrong exercise for your, you know, metabolic type. And so we talk about that a lot in our Wellness Warrior 9-Week Transformation Program. So it's time for our next commercial break. We still have a couple more questions, so this is awesome. When we come back, we'll talk about these questions here, and then we'll wrap it up. You're listening to Awaken Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Milen Riobe. We'll be right back.
What happens when we begin to realize that the 200-year experiment we've called the American healthcare system has failed? Learn how spirituality, ancient traditions, and cutting-edge science are merging to create a new paradigm of wellness on Awakened Wellness with Milen Riobe. That's MilenRiobe, MD. Tune in every Wednesday at 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time with live video shows every first and third Wednesdays at 12 p.m. Eastern, when you can call in and ask Dr. Milen the questions that matter most to you. Dr. Milen is the founder of Awakened Wellness Now, an online education community dedicated to helping exhausted entrepreneurs recover from burnout and live their best lives. She's also a practicing physician at the New York Center for Integrative Health in New York City. For more information, visit awakenedwellnessnow.com. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you in for this dynamic, forward-thinking show.
Edicia is a U.S. nonprofit dedicated to the dream of ending childhood malnutrition for millions of children around the world. Through the manufacture of Plumpy Nut and other nutrient-rich, peanut-based, ready-to-use foods, Edicia has already delivered life and hope to nearly 1 million children in over 26 developing countries. To find out how you can join Edicia's dream of ending childhood malnutrition, please visit ediciaglobal.org.
What if dreams can diagnose your life? What if we can meet the love of our life in dreams? Join host Kat O'Keefe Canovas, the number one internationally best-selling author of Dreams That Can Save Your Life, written with Duke University medical doctor Larry Burke. Dreaming Healing is where we'll explore dreams, research, and interpret dreams from you, the caller. Dreaming Healing shows can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern, with live shows on the first and third evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Come live your dreams out loud with Kat.
Are you searching for a way to help create global change? Dream Vision 7 Radio Network's vision is to have an eclectic group of radio hosts dedicated to educating, enlightening, and helping humankind with positive messages and tools that enhance lives using different modalities and programs. If you would like to join our team and help illuminate the universe, call Deborah at 508-226-1723 or Deborah at dreamvision7radio.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back to Awaken Wellness, and we're talking about the GLP-1 weight loss injection drugs and their potential risks. One of the things, again, where we're kind of going wrong is, again, we don't really understand root causes in medicine. One of the root causes of obesity that is talked about is what's called leptin resistance. So leptin is a hormone that tells us that we're full. And the idea that we're resistant to the leptin, like the leptin's not working for some reason, is thought to be the cause of obesity in the medical community, but it isn't, right? So we have to ask ourselves, well, why would the body do that? Like, the body wouldn't normally do that, right? It would, leptin would respond appropriately you know, and help us to eat when we need to and stop eating, you know, and give us the proper control of our appetite. So when that breaks, we have to ask ourselves, why is that broken, right? I believe at some point, hopefully, we will determine that that has to do with a lot with malabsorption and the vitamin and mineral deficiencies that we have not yet recognized in the medical community that people actually have. So in the integrative medical community, we understand that vitamin deficiencies are a massive problem. In the regular medical community, we don't believe that to be an issue. So again, the CDC says that only 10% of Americans have vitamin deficiencies. It's just simply not true. It's because, again, we're looking at blood work to determine that when we should be looking inside the cells. And again, the World Health Organization gave the CDC a hint of this years ago. When it informed the CDC, it sent the CDC a report about cellular levels of folic acid and how they were much more accurate than blood levels of folic acid. So folic acid is important in pregnancy, and so it gets a lot of attention. And so the World Health Organization realized that, oh, when we measure cellular levels of folic acid, we actually get more accurate results. And it informed the CDC of its findings. And so the CDC was like, oh, cool. And then it adapted that, but it didn't bother to look at all the other vitamins and minerals that might be in the same boat, right? So they got a little bit of an indication of this, and then they just left it alone, right? Vitamin and mineral deficiencies are a massive problem for people. When you look in the right places, you will find them. When you look inside of the cells, you will find the vitamin and mineral deficiencies that we keep claiming don't exist in the medical community. Once we figure that out, we will then understand why we would become leptin resistant, right? Why would the body want miscontrol its hunger and miscontrol when it needs to eat? That has a lot to do with what it's missing, you know, where it's metabolically broken. Metabolism breaks when we don't have the proper nutrition. Now, that doesn't always mean that you're not eating the right foods. There's a way that if you have SIBO, if you have malabsorption, if you don't have enough enzymes to digest your food, you don't have enough stomach acid to digest your food, you know, you're going to be vitamin and mineral deficient no matter how healthy you eat. You know, so I believe that that is what we are seeing as a leptin resistance. We're calling leptin resistance the root cause of obesity when it's not. And so we have to look at those root causes and correct them while, again, inducing preservation of muscle mass. So leptin, you know, of course, there's a lot of attention. How do we control leptin levels? How do we get the body to become more sensitive to leptin? A small study showed that protein does that, right? So again, I'm a huge protein fan for a reason. You know, protein is a good way to help your body to understand when it's hungry and not hungry. Yeah, more. So what I've noticed as a practitioner, as a physician, when I counsel my patients who are not eating enough protein to eat more protein, they will naturally tell me that their cravings went away. You know, and when I counsel them to not skip breakfast, especially if they have a deficient dynamic metabolic type, they feel better. They lose weight just by default, you know, and especially when that breakfast includes protein. I usually recommend that people include protein in every meal and snacks. Your body really understands much better and is much more efficient at using protein as a fuel source than it is at using carbs as a fuel source. So mostly because we can't guess how much carb our bodies will burn. Like, we don't know how many calories our bodies will burn from moment to moment. You know, there's really not a good way to calculate that. So when we eat more protein, we're giving the body control over that. When we eat too much carb, so let's say you're hungry and you grab a carb snack, right? And you eat, a bagel, for example. Now your body has sugar, you know, bombarding it, and it has to do something with that sugar. It only has two choices. It's either going to burn that fuel immediately after it's absorbed and digested and absorbed, has to be burned immediately. if it's not burned immediately, it has to be stored as fat. There is no other choice for your body. When instead of consuming the bagel, let's say you had some egg whites, for example, and just a protein snack instead. Now your body gets that as a protein, and it's not such a dire emergency, right? Where it has to burn it or it has to store it as fat. It doesn't have to do that. Now your body has time. It will either stay as a protein and go to building muscles and restoring your body and things like that. Or if your body needs it for fuel, it'll chisel off just what it needs. It'll convert that protein into a carb very precisely to burn it, to do whatever it needed to do. Your body will never over convert protein into carbs and then have to store that as fat. So in other words, when you eat protein as a dominant macronutrient, your body will not convert that protein to fat. But when you're eating a lot of carbs as a dominant macronutrient, your body almost has no choice but to store that as fat. And with fat comes inflammation, and that compounds the weight gain. And it also drops your metabolism, right? Because again, muscle structure and muscle mass is metabolism, like literally is metabolism. That's the biggest metabolic engine that we have in the body is the muscles of our musculoskeletal system. So when we preserve that, we're burning a lot more fuel. In other words, our body can perform a lot more of our body function. And so I found that to be very curious, that increasing protein was able to assist with some of this leptin resistance that we claim is the cause of obesity. Let's see, question. Do you consider weight gain a disease or something else? Obesity is a disease. For me, weight gain is more of a sign of a metabolic dysfunction. Something's wrong with the metabolism. Metabolism is how you make and use energy to perform your body's functions. When that doesn't work properly, we gain weight, you know, we gain weight when the metabolism breaks, right? So metabolism can break because it's inundated with toxins and it can't get rid of it. So there's this inflammation and toxic burden that causes the weight to be gained. Or if metabolism is weakened, again, if we have a bunch of vitamin and mineral deficiencies, malabsorption, we're not eating properly, or we're fasting too much, or we're over-exercising, something's wearing the metabolism out, you will gain weight because your body will start to shut down functions so that it can burn fewer calories than it thinks it's getting, if that makes sense. If your body thinks it's starving, it will shut down as many functions as it needs to that are non-essential: hair growth, muscle maintenance, bone structure, restoration, right? Your body's constantly turning itself over. So if it doesn't have enough, nutrition to do that, it won't turn itself over as efficiently, and you'll have rapid aging, aches and pains, diseases, things like that will settle in. So we are running out of time. So next week, we're going to pick up on how to effectively lose weight and maintain that normal weight without these shortcuts and things that could potentially make us sicker in the long term. So that's all the time we have for today. As always, thank you so much for listening. I hope this was helpful to you. And until next time, I wish you many, many blessings. Don't forget to check us out at awakenedwellnessnow.com. Thank you.
Join us next time on Awakened Wellness with Mylène Riobé, MD, to learn how spirituality, ancient traditions, and cutting-edge science are merging to create a new paradigm of wellness. Awakened Wellness airs every Wednesday at 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time, with live video shows every first and third Wednesday at 12 p.m. Eastern of each month. Meanwhile, you can join our Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Mylène and let us know what you'd like to discuss on future episodes. Dr. Mylène is the founder of Awakened Wellness Now, an online education community dedicated to helping exhausted entrepreneurs recover from burnout and live their best lives. She's also a practicing physician at the New York Center for Integrative Health in New York City. For more information, visit awakenedwellnessnow.com. This show is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.